I here mention with regret a sad accident that occurred to a citizen in passing from one to another of our camps, and which will tend to show the degree of cold we experienced during January. He had left one of the camps with the intention of going to the Deer Lodge Valley. Night and severe cold overtaking him before he could reach another camp, he halted to build a fire, and being wet, endeavored to slip off his moccasins when he found them frozen to his feet. He became alarmed and, retracing his steps, reached the point he had started from late at night, but with both feet frozen, and on their being thawed in a tub of water, all the flesh fell off. The poor fellow suffered intensely, and his life was only saved by his suffering the amputation of both legs above the knees. The operation was performed by Dr. George Hammond, United States Army. A purse of several hundred dollars was raised for him, and he was left to the kind charity of the fathers at the Pendere Mission, where he remained up to the date of our leaving the mountains. Our force was now concentrated upon the side hills along the Hell's Gate River. This work was finished by the middle of May, involving in all the 5 cuts, 7 miles of excavation, partly in rock. These cuts avoided 10 crossings of the Hell's Gate River. At the distance of 30 miles from the Big Blackfoot, we were compelled to throw the location to the left bank of the Hell's Gate, and this necessity involved a bridge of 250 feet. Finding in the month of May that the high water prevented me from building this bridge, I gave the contract for the same to a Mr. Samuel Hugo, a resident of the Deer Lodge Valley. This is now completed. He was enabled to get out all the timber in high water and erected it as the freshet subsided. The completion of this work left the entire line to the Deer Lodge Valley in a practicable condition. Then my plan for a summer movement was determined upon. Directing Captain Marsh and Mr. Williamson to break up our winter camp and proceed to the valley of the St. Regis Borgia, and there cover all the bridges left unfinished during the past autumn, with an escort of 16 soldiers and 6 civilians, and such of my employees as desired to return to the States via Fort Benton, I started for the Missouri River on the 23rd of May, 1862. Cantonment Wright, so called in honor of General Wright, a warm friend of our enterprise, was now abandoned. Though a cold and bleak place, it nevertheless proved a suitable point for our purposes. The camp was situated upon the high flat and the forks of the Blackfoot and Hell's Gate rivers, where timber was abundant and close. But exposed to the bleak winds that at times came down the valley of the Blackfoot, it was found an abode of not over much comfort. All travel with the Indians had been suspended during the winter, but as snow disappeared, they were once more on the move, some crossing the plains in quest of buffalo, whilst others were returning from the same point where they had passed the winter. The latter brought accounts of the severity of the winter on the upper Yellowstone and Missouri rivers, and of the loss of stock that nearly all the Indians had sustained. Mr. Burr, however, in company with Mr. Warden, crossed the main range of the Rocky Mountains in March, for Fort Benton. From which point Mr. Warden descended the Missouri to St. Louis to make his annual purchase of goods for his mountain trade. Though they found much snow in the mountains proper, they found none on the plains, and during the month of April Mr. Dawson, in charge of Fort Benton, sent me a pack train across the mountains without difficulty or loss. It is but seldom that the winter is so severe as to interfere seriously with travel across via the Little Blackfoot and Deer Lodge prairies. My arrangements for a departure from Fort Benton being completed by the 23rd of May, we started with a pack train and made the Deer Lodge Valley in 5 camps. Expecting to find the Flint Creek much swollen, I had a canoe built and transported thither. This proved a most fortunate precaution, as on reaching its banks, it was so much swollen that we would have been unable to make its passage without such aid. We halted at the American Fork and visited the Deer Lodge gold mines, where we found Messrs. Blake, McAdow, Higgins, Dr. Atkinson, and Gold Tom at work sluicing, and at that time they were taking out about $10 per day to the hand, and with fair prospects of extensive digging. Wherever parties had prospected in ravines or river bottoms, they had found prospects from 1 to 15 cents to the pan. Convincing ourselves by indubitable proofs of the existence of gold at this point, we continued our journey, reaching the fort without accident on the 8th of June. We had found the streams much swollen, especially the Little Blackfoot, Small Prickly Pear, and Sun Rivers. We, however, forded them all except the Sun. Fearing that the Dearborn would not prove fordable, I had sent forward a party to here construct a canoe. While with my whole camp, I remained for 2 days at the east base of the Rocky Mountains to there gain some additional data for determining the position of the pass. These data were collected by Mr. Kolecki, whose camp was pitched upon the summit of the mountains and where most beautiful clear days and nights enabled us to obtain a good series of observations. Having had a ferry boat built by Mr. Dawson at the agency on Sun River and which was kindly taken charge of by Mr. McCullough, we were enabled to cross this stream without very serious difficulty, though at the time the river was even with its banks and the current very rapid. For the want of other lumber, the boat on the Sun River was built of cottonwood plank, 42 feet long by 12 feet broad and 2 deep. Reaching Fort Benton by the 8th of June, we had a Mackinac boat built by the 12th when my party started for St. Louis, and having myself completed all my business at this point, I started on my return to my party in the mountains. On the way back, we had an abundance of game for which we were largely indebted to Mr. F.H. Burr, who is an excellent shot and good hunter, being desirous of recovering some horses stolen from him by the Blackfeet 2 months previous. He had availed himself of our trip and became our compagnon du voyage. On our trip from Deer Lodge to Fort Benton, we performed no work beyond what our immediate wants demanded, but I was enabled to mark in detail the points where additional repairs were yet required. The chief point was over the Medicine Rock Mountain. It is barely possible that the Medicine Rock Mountain might be avoided by following down the Big Prickly Pear immediately on crossing the Rocky Mountains to the Missouri and working a road along that river to near the mouth of the Little Prickly Pear. I am not positive whether this can be done. I examined this section in 1854, and my recollection of the region was against its feasibility. In case the road should be reworked, it is worthy a special examination. There is no other way of avoiding this mountain, and should this prove impracticable, nothing is left except to work the high water trail throughout over the Medicine Rock Mountain. This, in many places, will be through rock, but with time and means, a good road can be made. After this, a good bridge should be built over Willow Creek. The two crossings of the Big Prickly Pear should be avoided by work over the hills, and the entire section along the North Fork of the Little Blackfoot should be worked by excavating a road along the northern side hills, wherever the ground is wet and marshy. Two crossings of the main Little Blackfoot should be avoided, and a bridge built over its third and last crossing. With these improvements and such other slight work as the nature of the repairs may demand, the road from Deer Lodge to Fort Benton will be an excellent one at all times, and upon which, in time, there will be much travel. I returned to the Deer Lodge Valley at the American Fork by the 24th of June, meeting several wagon trains en route for Fort Benton to freight out supplies for the Bitterroot and Deer Lodge Valleys. At the American Fork, I was overtaken by Mr. Steele from Fort Benton with the intelligence that four steamers had arrived at that point since the date of my departure with 364 immigrants from St. Louis for Walla Walla and other points en route, that they were provided with saw and grist mills, and that there were among them many miners who intended prospecting the country en route. Also, that another trading house under the auspices of LaBarge, Harkness and Company of St. Louis was to be established near Fort Benton. This cheering intelligence was very gratifying to myself, seeing in it the commencement of a long line of emigrant travel that in years to come must course along these rivers in search of new homes towards the Pacific slope. Learning at American Fork that Captain Marsh was pushing on towards Walla Walla without having done what had been contemplated by myself on leaving Cantonment Right, I left my party under charge of Mr. Sohan with instructions to move at easy marches till overtaking me, and with one man moved rapidly to the camp of my advance party, then under Mr. Williamson, reaching them July 1st. Finding Captain Marsh had already crossed the Spokane and being so fatigued by my long journey as to be unable to proceed myself, I dispatched one of my men with orders to Captain Marsh to halt and await further instructions, and at the same time forwarded dispatches to General Wright and Alford reporting the same. Captain Marsh afterwards returned to the Spokane, and there, awaiting the arrival of myself and party, stated to me that he had misunderstood the exact instructions given him, so no further action was taken in the case. To me it was a source of regret and militated strongly against the best interest of the road and the amount of work which might have been judiciously performed in replacing certain bridges that the freshet had destroyed, and aiding Mr. Williamson in his severe work of covering others. I found on my return that one of the sections along the Hell's Gate had been washed away by the sudden rise, and the big Blackfoot Bridge, to a certain extent, thrown out of shape. The latter I gave to Mr. Hugo to repair, and with regard to the former, I told the county commissioners of Missoula County that if they would have this section repaired, I would recommend that the sum of $500 be set aside to cover its expense. With these two exceptions, no additional repairs were needed till reaching the Skiote Creek. Here a bridge should be erected, and the present upper crossing might be found the best place for locating it. The rocky points, several miles below, might be either repaired or changed to the trail line, and here blasting or bridging might meet all the difficulty of location. No other material points need attention until we come to the Nemote Creek. Here, instead of taking Brown's Cutoff, I should now prefer to excavate a line from 1.5 to 2 miles along the Bitterroot, and say from 100 to 200 feet above the river, in order to get above all the slides, and by this means shorten the road 2 miles and avoid a steep hill. This done, there would be no further work required till reaching the Bitterroot Ferry. From this point to the Spokane Plain, a distance of 120 miles, I should desire to see the timbered section cut 60 feet broad. The admission of additional sunlight and heat, and the less danger of obstruction from fallen timber, as well as the greater rapidity with which the snow would melt in autumn and early spring, are advantages to its favor so strong that if done, at least 2 months of travel will be added yearly, and the road made subservient to many more projects than I can now claim for it. A road should be cut around Mud Prairie to its south, and thus avoid a point difficult in early spring. We lost 6 bridges along the St. Regis Borgia and 2 along the Coeur d'Alene during the freshet. 4 of these might be avoided by a side hill excavation another season, and it should be worked at any cost of the construction. The excavation will be in rock at these side cuts. For this work and that needed from the Deer Lodge to Fort Benton, I think the amount of $70,000 should be appropriated by Congress, $20,000 to be used in the Deer Lodge section, and the remainder in the timbered belt referred to from the Bitterroot Ferry to the Spokane Plain. The freshet in these mountains is a difficulty to be sternly handled, and too much care cannot be taken in selecting suitable abutment sites for bridging. The excessive amount of bridging that the Coeur d'Alene calls for is an element of disadvantage difficult to eliminate. Along the North Fork of the Coeur d'Alene, from Johnson's Cutoff to Long Prairie, all the crossings might be avoided by making some 3 or 4 miles of excavation along the side hills. But I candidly believe the government would eventually find it to its advantage to open a line through the mountains via the Clark's Fork to the Hell's Gate, and thence use my road to Fort Benton. Every advantage of climate would be then gained, and though the amount needed to open it might prove at first large, yet looking to the fact that it could be traveled every month in the year, we have an argument so permanently in its favor that it must weigh down all other considerations, and I can only hope that the matter may yet be taken up by some person competent to handle it. The work of covering the bridges in the valley of the St. Regis Borgia having been completed, my party moved for Fort Walla Walla, making such repairs en route as the condition of the road called for. Crossed the Spokane and halted at Hangman's Creek. This is the largest and most important stream to cross between Fort Walla Walla and the Spokane. The freshet here, having been unusually high, had swept away the bridge erected during the last season. I determined, therefore, to choose a new site and erect a new and stronger bridge that should defy the force of the highest freshet. Setting the men at work, we had a fine structure ready by the middle of August when we took up our line of march for Fort Walla Walla. By this time we were overtaken by several small parties of immigrants who had come from St. Louis by the steamers before referred to, and were now on their way to Walla Walla. I aided all in every way in my power and furnished supplies to those who needed them, also leaving memorandum notes from point to point, setting forth the best camping grounds, etc. All these immigrants were a very proper class of persons, mostly from the western states, where the civil troubles had caused a number to look towards the Pacific in quest of new homes. They had made the journey on the steamers in from 30 to 40 days from St. Louis, and purchasing their land outfit at Fort Benton at very moderate figures, were journeying safely and pleasantly towards the setting sun. The safe passage of these immigrants during this season proves the value of this line for immigrant purposes, and will yet cause it to stand in competition with other lines across the continent. From the Spokane to Walla Walla, we found the road in good condition, and it will hereafter only require those slight repairs always demanded on the best of turnpikes to keep it in excellent order. Reaching Walla Walla late in August, I disposed of my property at public auction, disbanded my expedition, and on the 11th of September started for Washington City to make my report to the War Department. Thus ended my work in the field, costing 7 years of close and arduous attention, exploring and opening up a road of 624 miles from the Columbia to the Missouri at a cost of $230,000. That it will subserve the many purposes claimed for it by its friends, I can only sincerely hope that time may eventually prove. With every disposition on my part, it is impossible here to give those details of construction where special difficulties arose day by day for solution. The many trying positions in which I found myself placed during so long a period, the many discomforts put upon with by my men who yet retained all their cheerfulness. Suffice it to say, we succeeded to our own satisfaction in accomplishing the full object of our mission, and those who by their cheerful aid lent me their cooperation have here my most heartfelt thanks. General Division of Route. Our road involved 120 miles of difficult timber cutting, 25 feet broad and 30 measured miles of excavation, 15 to 20 feet wide. The remainder was either through an open timbered country or over open rolling prairie. From Walla Walla eastward, the country might be described in succinct terms as follows. First, 180 miles open level or rolling prairie. Next, 120 miles densely timbered mountain bottoms. Next, 224 miles open timbered plateaus with long stretches of prairie. And next, 100 miles level or rolling prairie. Thus it is seen that the Rocky and Bitterroot Mountains rise midway in our route with long prairie slopes on either side, that the latter are intersected in every direction by streams flowing from both watersheds and rising in the heart of the mountain system, that these prairies stretch interpose but slight obstructions to the location of a road, and it is only in the more elevated central sections where our sterner engineering problems are to be met. Itinerary of route. For those who would desire to know in detail the special features of each day's march, as well as each campground and distance, or who might desire to retrace the steps herein described, the following itinerary is furnished, viz. First day, leave Walla Walla and move 7.5 miles to Dry Creek and encamp at crossing. Easy rolling prairie hills en route, wood, water, and grass at camp. Second day, leave Dry Creek and move 11.5 miles to Tucci Bridge and encamp. Easy rolling, prairie hills en route, wood, water, and grass abundant. Third day, from Tucci take wood in wagons for 2 days. Move 7 miles to the springs and encamp. Grass and water here, but no wood. Level prairie road en route. Fourth day, leave springs and move to Snake River, distance 20 miles, grass, water, and driftwood here. Graze animals on hills on left bank, good road over rolling prairie, somewhat hilly. Fifth day, cross Snake River by ferry boat, charge for wagons $4, men 50 cents each, riding and pack animals 50 cents each, swim loose stock or, if preferred, ferry same. Move to Palouse, distance 14.5 miles, water and grass, willows for fuel. It would be well to take a small quantity of driftwood along from Snake River, good road. Sixth day, move to Cow Creek, distance 11 miles, wood, water, and grass at camp, good place to rest animals for a day if required. Seventh day, move to Aspen Grove, distance 18 miles, good road. Wood, water, and grass at camp, good place to rest animals a day if required. Eighth day, move to Lagoon Camp, distance 21.5 miles, good road, wood, water, and grass at camp. Ninth day, move to Rock Creek, distance 12.5 miles, somewhat stony, but animals should be shod, in which case they will travel well, wood, water, and grass at camp. Tenth day, move to Hangman's Creek, distance 19 miles, good road, wood, water, and grass at camp. 11th day, move to Spokane River, distance 12.5 miles, and cross, wood, water, and grass at camp. Good place to rest animals, charge for each wagon $4, for each man 50 cents, swim loose dock or ferry if preferred, there is a ford 8 miles above. 12th day, move to camp on Spokane. At the edge of the timber, distance 16 miles, good road, wood, water, and grass abundant. 13th day, move to Wolf's Lodge Prairie, distance 18 miles, road hilly in places but not bad, wood, water, and grass at camp. 14th day, move to the Coeur d'Alene Mission, distance 17 miles, road hilly at one or two places but not bad, wood, water, and grass at the mission. Good place to rest animals for a day or two, and which is by all means advisable, as you now enter the timber where campgrounds have to be specially selected and the animals should be well rested. Vegetables may be had at the mission. 15th day, move to Mud or 10-mile prairie. Road good, in very early spring may be wet in places, good camp for wood, grass, and water. A good camp may also be had in 7 miles from the mission in open timber. Water 300 yards to the north of road in Running Creek, good place for animals. 16th day, move to the 15th bridge, good water and wood. Grass is not very abundant, but there are a number of small prairies above and below this bridge where grass is found. About half a mile below the bridge on right bank is a fine prairie, road good, distance 16 miles. 17th day, move to Johnson's Cutoff, which is a ravine from the north. The head of this ravine and the hills around it furnish an abundance of grass. This may be the worst day's march as it involves many crossings and the road may be wet, distance 11 miles. An endeavor should be made to camp here at the risk of getting late into camp. 18th day, move to Long Prairie, distance 3 miles. Road good unless during the freshet when some of the crossings may be swollen. Long Prairie is 1 mile long, 1/4 of a mile broad, grass in large portion, grass also on hills to the north. It just before the descent into the prairie, a blind trail leads to it through the timber. 19th day, make an early start and cross summit of Bitterroot Mountains. May have to double teams at second curve. Move to 5 mile prairie on St. Regis Borgia River, distance 11.5 miles, grass sparse, wood and water abundant. 20th day, move 11.5 miles to Sawyer's Prairie, wood, water, and grass abundant, road good. 21st day, move to Cantonment, Jordan, 5.5 miles distant, grass 0.5 mile above camp, wood and water everywhere. 22nd day, move to Bitterroot Ferry, distance 14.25 miles, wood, water, and grass abundant. 23rd day, cross ferry and go to 7 mile prairie, charges for crossing the same as at the Spokane and Snake ferries. The stream is fordable in very low water, but I would advise all strangers to cross in the ferry boat, as the ford is a dangerous one, except to those who know it well. Rest your animals at this point. Good camp with wood, water, and grass. 24th day, move 9.5 miles to Brown's Prairie. Good road, wood, water, and grass at camp. 25th day, move 15.5 miles to west end of Big Side Cut and camp at foot of mountain on Small Creek. Wood, water, and grass abundant. May have to double teams over Brown's Cutoff Divide going either way. Road good with this exception. 26th day, move over Big Side Cut to a camp on Main River, 1 mile above the Rocky Points, where the road passes through a rocky defile, distant 17 miles, road fare, wood, water, and grass at camp. 27th day, moved to Brown's house, 12 miles distant, road good, wood, water, and grass at camp. 28th day, moved to Higgins and Warden's store at Hell's Gate, distance 12 and a half miles, road excellent, wood, water, and grass here. Good place to rest animals for a day or two. Blacksmith shop at Van Dorn's, and supplies of all kinds can be obtained. Dry goods, groceries, beef, vegetables, and fresh animals if needed. 29th day, moved to Big Blackfoot Bridge, 11 miles, road good, wood, water, and grass abundant. 30th day, moved to Campbell's Camp, 15 miles, excellent road, good wood, water, and grass abound. 31st day, moved to Lannan's Camp, 9 miles, road excellent, may have to double teams at Beaver Tail Butte, wood, water, and grass abundant. 32nd day, move 11 miles to Lions Creek, crossing en route Hell's Gate Bridge, road good, wood, water, and grass at camp. 33rd day, move to Flint Creek, distance 11 miles, road somewhat hilly but still not steep, wood, water, and grass at camp. 34th day, move 13 and one half miles to Gold Creek, or American Fork of Hell's Gate River, road excellent, wood, water, and grass at camp, supplies of all kinds to be had here, dry goods, groceries, fresh beef, animals, and possibly vegetables. 35th day, move to Deer Lodge River, distance 16 miles, road hilly but not requiring double teaming, wood, water, and grass at camp. Deer Lodge would be found a good place to rest for a day or two, fresh beef to be had here from the settlers. 36th day, move to Little Blackfoot River, 17 and a quarter miles, road generally good, hilly at one or two points but not steep, good wood, grass, and water at camp. 37th day, move to west base of Rocky Mountains at Mullins Pass, 13 and a half miles, road generally good, though sometimes wet in early spring, no ascending the North Fork of the Little Blackfoot, wood, water, and grass at camp. 38th day, cross summit of Rocky Mountains and go 7 miles to Fir Creek, road good, wood, water, and grass at camp. 39th day, move 17 miles to Little Prickly Pear Creek, road hilly in places but not bad. Camps at shorter distances can be made as several creeks are passed en route. Softbed Creek midway offers a good camp. This would be a good place to rest animals. 40th day, start early and go over Medicine Rock Mountain, 15 and a half miles. This is the worst day's march. Road rocky in places, but with care easily made. Wood, water, and grass at camp on Oversight Creek. 41st day, move 20 miles to the Dearborn River, wood, water, and grass at camp. 42nd day, move to Birdtail Rock, 15 miles, road excellent, water and grass at camp, willows for fuel but scant. It would be well to pack wood from the Dearborn or Sun Rivers according to which way you are traveling. 43rd day, move to Blackfoot Agency on Sun River, 18 and a half miles, excellent road, wood, water, and grass at camp. Good place to rest animals for a day or two. In high water, there is a ferry boat for crossing. 44th day, move 8 miles to the point where you leave Sun River. Road excellent, wood, water, and grass at camp. 45th day, move 16 miles to the lake. Road excellent, water and grass, take wood from camp. 46th day, move to the springs, 7 miles, water and grass, but no wood. Or you can go to the Big Coulee, 16 miles further, and encamp on the Missouri River, road good. 47th day, move to Fort Benton, 27 miles, if you encamp at the springs, or 11 miles, if you encamp at the Big Coulee. The latter never was a portion of my road, but was worked by Major Delancey Floyd Jones, and I am not responsible either for its location or the character of the work performed. If you are going from Fort Benton, it would be preferable to camp at the spring. This can be accomplished by starting early, and I should advise all parties traveling with wagons to avoid the Big Coulee. If water be not sufficiently abundant at the springs, then encamp at the lake. It may be found best to start at dawn and make the lake. The road is excellent. The total distance herein given is 624 miles, made in 47 days traveling, or allowing 18 days for delays, contingencies, and recruiting animals, in 55 days with loaded wagons, or in 35 days if you are traveling with pack animals. Recommendations for travelers. For persons who desire to leave St. Louis in the spring on steamer for Fort Benton, where the passage is from $40 to $100 and freight from 5 cents to 10 cents per pound, and who desire to make the land transit by wagon, I would advise that they provide themselves with a light spring-covered wagon in St. Louis, also 2 or 4 sets of strong harness, and transport them to Fort Benton, where they can procure their animals, mules, or horses. The former can be had from $100 to $150, the latter from $50 to $75. Oxen from $100 to $125 per yoke. Let them provide themselves with a small kit of good strong tin or plated iron mess furniture, kettles to fit one in the other, tin plates and cups, and strong knives and forks. Purchase their own supplies in St. Louis. Brown sugar, coffee or tea, bacon, flour, salt, beans, sardines, and a few jars of pickles and preserved fruits will constitute a perfect outfit in this department. I have found that for 10 men for 50 days, the following is none too much on a trip of this kind: 625 pounds of flour, 50 pounds of coffee, 75 pounds of sugar, 2 bushels of beans, 1 bushel of salt, 625 pounds of bacon side, 2 gallons of vinegar, 20 pounds of dried apples, 3 dozen of yeast powders, and by all means take 2 strong covered ovens, Dutch ovens. These amounts can be increased or diminished in proportion to the number of men and number of days. If your wagon tires become loose on the road, caulk them with old gunny sacks, or in lieu thereof with any other sacking. Also, soak the wheels well in water whenever an opportunity occurs. In loading the wagons, an allowance of 400 pounds to the animal will be sufficient for a long journey. For riding saddles, select a California or Mexican tree with mahseres and tapaderos, hair, girth, double gray saddle blanket, and strong snaffle bit. If the intention is to travel with a pack train, take the Cross-T pack saddle with crupper and breeching and broad thick pads. Use lash rope with canvas or leather belly bands. Have a double blanket under each saddle. Balance the load equally on the 2 sides of the animal, the whole not to exceed 200 pounds. Have a canvas cover for each pack. A mule blind may be found useful in packing. Each pack animal should have a hackamore, and every animal packing and riding a picket rope from 35 to 40 feet long and 1 inch in diameter. For my own purposes, I have always preferred the aparajo for packing, and have always preferred mules to horses. Packages of any shape can be loaded upon the aparajo more conveniently than upon the pack saddle. A bell animal should be always kept with a pack train, and a gray mare is generally preferred. Every article to be used in crossing the plains should be of the best manufacture and strongest material. This will, in the end, prove true economy. Animals should be shod on the 4 feet at least. Starting at dawn and camping not later than 2 p.m., I have always found the best plan in marching. Animals should not go out of a walk or slow trot, and after being unloaded in camp, they should always be allowed to stand with their saddles on and girths loose for at least 15 minutes, as the sudden exposure of their warm backs to the air tends to scald them. They should be regularly watered morning, noon, and night. Never maltreat them, but govern them as you would a woman, with kindness and affection and caresses, and you will be repaid by their docility and easy management. If you travel with a wagon, provide yourself with a jack screw, extra tongue, and coupling pole. Also, axle grease, a hatchet, and nails, auger, rope, twine, and 1 or 2 chains for wheel locking, and 1 or 2 extra whipple trees, as well as such other articles as in your own judgment may be deemed necessary. A light canvas tent with poles that fold in the middle by a hinge I have always found most convenient. Tables and chairs can be dispensed with, but if deemed absolutely necessary, the old army camp stool and a table with lid that removes and legs that fold under I have found to best subserve all camp requisites. Never take anything not absolutely necessary. This is a rule of all experienced voyagers. Advice to immigrants by this route. Those who start from the upper Mississippi frontier can replenish their original supplies at Fort Union, at the mouth of the Yellowstone at Fort Benton, and in addition at the other points hitherto alluded to. Those who travel by the Central or Platte route desire to take the western section of our road to Walla Walla can deflect either at Fort Laramie, the Red Buttes, or Fort Hall and connect with it at the Deer Lodge Valley. The road from Fort Laramie to the Deer Lodge Valley has never been worked, but was passed over with wagons by Captain Reynolds of the Army in 1859 and 1860 on a tour of exploration and reported upon by him as practicable. It passes through a beautiful, easy, and interesting region. The road from Fort Hall to Deer Lodge has been used by wagons for many years, and though not worked, is quite practicable. Agricultural lands. The amount of agricultural land along the general line of the road may be safely estimated at 1,000 square miles or 640,000 acres. The largest single body is found in the Walla Walla Valley, where its rich soil, freedom from early frost, and with the mild climate there found, constitutes it a great agricultural center. Corn, oats, barley, spring and autumn wheat, tobacco, and every variety of vegetable are here grown in great abundance. Wheat, 30 bushels to the acre, barley and oats, 40 bushels, and corn from 60 to 80 bushels, and potatoes from 300 to 600 bushels to the acre. The grape and peach will be found to grow well here, and when the country is settled, the oak will take its place among the chief forest growth. The mines furnish a ready market for all that is raised, cash payments for which are made in gold. Fruit growing is attracting attention and thus far promises well. Erection of grist mills keep pace with the growing demands of the country. Another favorite agricultural tract is the Dry Creek. Its valley is already studded with beautiful farms, so also the Toochee, where there is still room for the industrious immigrant. At the mouth of the Palouse is a small tract of good land enough for one small farm, in which as trade and travel increase must become an important point. Several tracts of good soil are found along the Palouse, but the absence of timber is an impediment not easily supplied. Small tracts are found along the Cow Creek and along the road to Aspen Grove, and many in the direction of the long line of lagoons found along the road. An excellent body of good land is found along Lake Williamson and along several of the smaller lakes and creeks to the south. Several small bodies are found along both banks of the Spokane near the foothills. Several farms are already under culture. Along the upper Spokane are also small bodies. At the Coeur d'Alene Mission is the body of 5 or 6 square miles of most beautiful soil. Several hundred acres are here under cultivation by the mission and the Indians. Oats, barley, wheat, peas, potatoes are raised in rich abundance. One of the largest bodies of good land is in the valleys of the St. Joseph's and Coeur d'Alene, and if these valleys are once drained, a body of 40,000 acres of the finest soil in the world will be reclaimed, soil 6 and 8 feet deep and as black as coal. This overflow can be prevented by widening the natural outlet and making an artificial one alongside of it. An appropriation of $5,000 will meet this difficulty, and the ends to which it looks are well worthy the experiment. Rock blasting is the only method of accomplishing it and should be done during a low stage of water. The overflow is alone accustomed in the highest stages of water when the mouth of the outlet of the lake is not capacious enough to discharge the volume of water sent into it by its feeders. On the right bank of the Coeur d'Alene opposite the mission is a mile square of beautiful soil. 4 Mile Prairie has a good body of land, also 10 Mile Prairie. From this point to the Bitterroot Ferry, I fear the frost and other mountain characteristics will preclude any farms from being opened. At the mouth of the St. Regis Borgia, however, several tracts of land are found in which, if cultivated, will come into requisition for mail stations and supplying travelers and immigrants. 7 Mile Prairie along the Bitterroot River offers a good site for small farms, also Browns Prairie, Nemote Prairie, Sciote Creek, where the wild timothy abundantly grows in many large and beautiful tracts along the right bank of the main Bitterroot. Frenchtown is in Hell's Gate Rond, already contains from 10 to 15 small farms, and there is room for many more. The small creeks in Hell's Gate Rond offer many choice sites for farms. A dozen at least are here now under cultivation. Wheat, potatoes, oats, and barley, and all vegetables are raised. Corn is not matured, but is raised for roasting ears. The St. Mary's Valley to the south and the Jocko and Flathead Valleys to the north are large and favorite farming sections. Among the small creeks, tributaries to the Hell's Gate, 4 and 5 miles from the Big Blackfoot at Clark's Camp at Beaver Dam Butte, and along some of the smaller water runs, good soil is found. The upper portion of the valley of Flint Creek may be found suited to agriculture. From Flint Creek to the American Fork are many beautiful localities where farms may be open. A large and beautiful one is already opened by Mr. Dempsey, where he grows oats and wheat luxuriantly. The American Fork has some beautiful bodies of land along it. The Deer Lodge is a large and well-located valley and contains from 50 to 150 square miles where crops have already been grown. Along the Little Blackfoot and its smaller tributaries are found patches of good soil. From this point to the Big Prickly Pear Creek, the altitude and wet condition of the soil may prove impediments to successful or economical culture. Crossing the divide, we get into a new climate and a change of soil. Along the Big Prickly Pear will be found several small and choice localities for farms, and if the mines on the eastern slope prove successful, I look forward with much hope to see all these creeks settled and fine farms developed under the hand of the Rocky Mountain farmer. All the small creeks from the Big Prickly Pear to the Birdtail Rock have smaller bodies of good soil, and if the mines prove a reality, a market will be at hand for all they can raise. To the south of the Birdtail Rock, about 3 to 5 miles in a wild, broken region through which a wagon road can be laid to shorten our line from Sun River to the Dearborn, is one of the largest and richest bodies of land that I have seen east of the mountains, and where timber from the mountains and rock at hand will supply all the requisites of the first settlers. Situated as it is, midway between Fort Benton and the Prickly Pear gold mines, it is worthy an examination on the part of those who propose to settle in the country. I examined it on my return from Fort Benton, June 1862, to see if we could not shorten our line by going south the Birdtail Rock. With moderate work, I found this feasible and saving from 8 to 10 miles in distance, and it was on this trip that I was struck with the richness of the soil and the extent of agricultural land here found. It is a favorite resort for game, and sheltered as it is by high rock walls from the cold, bleak winds which sweep across the plains, forms a choice site for farms. The next good track is along the Sun River, where a stiff clay soil is already cultivated to advantage. The Blackfoot Agency has a farm of from 30 to 40 acres under cultivation and raises wheat and vegetables. Its valley is from 50 to 150 feet below the general level of the Missouri Plains and is thus sheltered from the colder winds that sweep across them at spring seasons. Patches of good soil are found along the Missouri above Fort Benton, but their culture has never been tested. There are enough statistics of growth from actual cultivation along the line to show that the many areas herein referred to will grow abundant crops, and all of which will come under tillage as soon as a market presents itself. At all the points referred to, abundant building material and water are at hand, and a mill sites can be had on nearly every watercourse. There are already 3 grist and 2 sawmills in the Walla Walla Valley, 1 grist mill at the Coeur d'Alene Mission, 1 saw and 1 grist mill at Frenchtown, 1 saw and 1 grist mill at the Ponderay Mission, 1 sawmill at the Jocko River, and 1 saw and 1 grist mill at Fort Owen, 1 steam saw and 1 grist mill owned by LaBarge and Company, which they propose to erect near the Deer Lodge gold mines. The Blackfoot Agency use a small hand mill for grinding their wheat. As an experiment, the value of which another season will develop, I had shipped from St. Louis to Fort Benton and thence packed over into the Bitterroot Mountains 24 bushels of bluegrass seed and 12 bushels of clover seed and sowed them at the crossing of the Bitterroot along the valley of the St. Regis Borgia and the Coeur d'Alene to the Mission, wherever the grass was sparse. The seed was thrown broadcast over the ground and through the woods and over the prairie at such points as are likely to be selected as camping grounds. This wooded section of 100 miles is the only point where grass is at all scarce, and this experiment was made by myself to meet fully all the wants of a future and large emigration over the road.